For book critic Maureen Corrigan, it was the year of the horse. Here's her best books list for 2001.
Some books were more consciously profound, other books were more lyrical, and still other books I never got around to reading. But in my estimation, the winner of Best Book of the Year is Seabiscuit, by a length. Laura Hillenbrand's dazzling account of the horse many aficionados believe was the greatest racehorse of all time gets the garland in part because if anyone had told me that I would one day be raving about the biography of a horse, I'd have snorted a resounding nay. In daredevil prose that sprints along at breakneck speed, Hillenbrand tells the unbelievable tale of Seabiscuit, a one-time loser who tore up the track for 5 years during the late 1930s into 1940. His story, and the story of the down-and-out men who joined together to uncover his championship potential, constitutes an inspiring extreme adventure tale of physical courage and moral grit, a tale that unfolded during a period when the whole country was living out an extreme adventure of its own, called the Great Depression. Other thoroughbred contenders in this year's nonfiction field were Nickel and Dimed, in which social critic Barbara Ehrenreich, like a latter-day Nellie Bly, investigated the realities of not making it in America by working minimum-wage jobs as a hotel maid, cleaning woman, nursing home health aide, and, as she dubs it, a Walmartian. Facing the Wind, by New York Times reporter Julie Salomon, is an intelligent, morally messy story about a Brooklyn lawyer named Bob Rowe, who in 1978 murdered his wife and 3 children, one of whom was severely handicapped. This is one true crime story that forces readers to look long and steadily at the deep sadness of some people's lives. The reprint editions of Joseph Mitchell's sublime collections, My Ears Are Bent and McSorley's Wonderful Saloon, take readers back to a New York of corner candy stores, men in fedoras, and steam heat. Patricia Volk's evocative autobiography, Stuffed, offers a gastronomical tour of lost New York, one that's heavily oriented toward pastrami, Malamars, chopped liver, and cucumber salad. For decades, Volk's family owned Morgan's, a renowned garment center restaurant on West 38th Street. It was the place, Volk writes, where I was princess. Waiters winked at me. They plucked the white linen napkin from under my fork, twirled it high in the air, then draped it over my lap. And when I asked for a hamburger, my grandfather would raise his forearm, then smash through the kitchen indoor and grind a steak himself. Poet Emily Dickinson reportedly made some excellent gingerbread. However, it's not her cooking skills, but her unstandard mind that Alfred Habiger explores in his terrific and testy new biography of Dickinson called My Wars Are Laid Away in Books. Literary fiction gave nonfiction a respectable run for the money this year. Empire Falls by Richard Russo was my favorite novel of the year. In this nearly 500-page, funny and moving, class-conscious story, there's not one false bit of dialogue, not one canned observation. I came a bit late to The Corrections, Jonathan Franzen's much-celebrated novel about an aging Midwestern couple, their 3 adult children, and every minute social observation Franzen could squeeze in about middle-class America in the late 20th century. The sweep and the language of The Corrections are indeed amazing. Here, for instance, is how Franzen describes the dementia of the family patriarch, Alfred Lambert. He had good days and bad days. It was as if when he lay in bed for a night, certain humors pooled in the right or wrong places, like marinade around a flank steak. And in the morning, his nerve endings either had enough of what they needed or did not, as if his mental clarity might depend on something as simple as whether he'd lain on his side or on his back the night before. I also think, however, that Franzen could have used a stern editor more than he needed that star-crossed endorsement from Oprah. some of the cataloging and internal monologues that distinguish the novel go on past the point of at least my interest. Other, less ambitious novels I loved were My Dream of You, Nuala O'Fallon's lyrical meditation on a life lived too cautiously, and Bel Canto by Ann Patchett, about a famous opera singer held hostage by revolutionaries. Patchett's lithe writing style does for this creaky plot what a great singer's voice does for a moth-eaten libretto. Long Time No See by Susan Isaacs, a.k.a. Jane Austen with a schmear, made me happy by bringing back Judith Singer, the first in Isaacs' long line of plucky heroines. And Almost by Elizabeth Benedict was the first novel I managed to read after September 11th. Its emotionally profound account of a youngish widow trying to figure out her life's wrong turnings nudged me back into an appreciation of why art matters, even, or especially, in history's most desperate hours.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. You can find her complete list on our website, freshair.com.